Okay, do you want to introduce yourself first of all?
I'm Robert O'Toole. Who am I? Well, I'm the Arts Faculty e-learning advisor, and I also do a lot of work with the Institute for Advanced Teaching and Learning. And my skills are, my background, I'm a teacher and an interaction designer. So I work with the interface between technology, people, knowledge, and complexity, and a learning designer as well. But I also have a background in philosophy, which is something I keep up, make sure I don't stop doing that. It's important.
So in keeping with your philosophical distinction, how would you define open space learning?
Well, I think it's something very big, and it's I think somebody in the past has said it's more like a movement than an ideology or even a small set of practices. But within that, from my own perspective, as a teacher, an e-learning advisor, interaction designer, I see open space learning as addressing one very, very important, difficult question. This is very narrow, so I know there's a lot more to it than this. But what has impressed me so much with open space learning approaches, and I've used open space learning in this way myself, is how it brings together, an open space learning activity can bring together disparate people with very different ideas in one space and get them, encourage them, sometimes force them to take what's in their heads and get it out into an open space, into a format that can be manipulated and exchanged. It can inspire other participants, get a feedback process going between them, create new ideas, or it can put ideas out into the open to be developed, tested, explored in a very sort of physical way.
So the suggestion there is that it's interdisciplinary. Would you say that it's essentially an interdisciplinary mode of teaching? Or do you think it could be located within disciplines?
Yeah. Well, my experience as a philosopher, and I guess my experience working in the arts and humanities more widely, is that the concept of a discipline, the idea that there are very singular, well-defined disciplines just doesn't apply. Each discipline, certainly philosophy, is a big, complex, ever-changing mess with some sort of core principles. But even so, that even the core principles are contended, and it's that contention that makes for academic life. Philosophy, it's so complex, so many different ways to approach things, that it's interdisciplinary in itself. I'm sure pretty much every arts and humanities subjects, and many other subjects, are as well.
You've highlighted the idea of dissension there, or contending things, and yet one of the philosophical justifications of open space learning, or the premise which underlies open space learning, is often the idea of convention or consensus, people being together, ensemble.
That's something I like, actually. Is I don't think those two things are in contradiction. They can be, and there can be a reflective contention of the open space learning convention in the events themselves, and I've seen that happen, and that can be worthwhile. But to have a diverse, or sometimes an extremely diverse and sometimes totally unconnected set of people, set of ideas being brought together and being instantiated in a physical place, but on a shared platform. So everybody is bringing out their ideas using the same physical activities and media, so that there's something, there's a shared platform community network going on, and that's actually then making it safer, easier for people to bring out those stark differences.
Yeah.
The open space learning activities where I've been a participant, I think the one on I can't remember what it was called, the IAS.
Oh, the collaboration.
Collaboration. Yeah, that was that did that. So there was a shared platform, but there were such different perspectives all being brought together.
Yeah.
And that then accelerates the rate at which people can engage with difference and adapt.
That interestingly, that was a postgraduate or postgraduate student staff event. I'm wondering if the same possibilities exist in undergraduate form, you know, because undergraduates tend to be more passive, tend to be more receptive to others' ideas.
Yes, I've got personally less experience at that level. Most of my teaching experiments with this have been with master's students. They're not that different to undergraduates. They haven't necessarily developed that strong sense of independence, a strong sense of identity, which means they can walk into a space and say, right, this is me, and lay it all out into the space. So I have done some work with undergraduates, and I think if it's managed in the right way, if it's handled in the right way, facilitated in the right way, and I think if they grasp and accept the fact that it's not an ordinary hierarchical transmission of content kind of event, they love it and they just get into it. And if they have media tools, objects, things, space that they can manipulate easily and they just get, then, which I think is maybe in part the role of technology to give them things that they are used to, they're familiar with, they can manage, they can understand.
It's interesting. I mean, you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned technology. Could you speak a little bit about your role in the Open Space Learning Project? And then maybe we could move into discussing the relation between open space and technology. Because I know that's quite a contested area in itself.
Yep, this is a thorny issue.
Yeah.
So I guess my official role has been to look for how technology may productively be integrated into open space learning. That's quite a big brief, which actually I think to many of the students I work with would be a really odd thing, a really odd idea, because just, you know, they are technological. In fact, that's kind of post-technological, because in fact this happened with the master's students when I was experimenting with open space learning technology, and bringing iPod Touch with video cameras and stills cameras into the space. Several of them actually just, without prompting, without warning, just took their own cameras out of their pockets and started taking photos for their own records. And that just happened. And that was totally natural to them. So I think the question of how does technology integrate with open space learning is probably... only makes sense to people who just are, that then they don't have that post-technological mindset. They see technology as being something
else,
different. So I think what I've just argued is that actually in reality it's not a question, and this is something that's just, you know, the issue is not with technology and the future of open space learning and the future of, because that's just going to happen. I think the issue is with open space learning now and its practitioners now and their attitude to technology.
I've
tried to say that in a very subtle and comfortable way.
And I suppose this must feed into the way in which we document open space learning as well. And I'm thinking about some of the issues surrounding open space learning, about documentation and about even assessment, I suppose. What you're arguing also is that this is the inevitable means for doing that.
Well, I don't. I'm not sure what inevitable means. It's one mean that will just be natural. To the open space learners of the future.
Yeah.
It's becoming natural. Now, we had the idea of as a contentious idea. So I'm not saying that this is accepted by everybody. The idea that an event could be documented by, and the act of documenting is a powerful learning tool in itself,
mm-hmm.
by the participants very easily.
Yeah.
Without it seeming unnatural. I mean, you can imagine a future, let's say 5 years away, I don't think that's unrealistic, in which a participant is in an open space learning event and doing something that they suddenly think, okay, that's really interesting, I just want to save that for later for my own reflection. Or maybe there's a few of the participants say, yeah, let's take that offline, or rather put it online,
yeah.
and come back to it later on. And it may just be in the future, a little tap on their glasses activates a video camera or a stills camera, takes a picture, takes a bit of video, and the device knows what the event is, what the time is, who the people are, and can archive it into a live archive for later use. Okay, that kind of behavior may just be natural. There are ethical, social issues with doing that. And that's something that I think that the younger generation are learning fast about those issues. Obviously Facebook has forced them, because Facebook in a way is that kind of live archive. Facebook has forced them to face up to those issues. Can you just take a picture of somebody else and then tag it and share what they were doing to the rest of the world? Well, people need to start understanding those things and start getting in control. It's not the technology, it's people, how they use technology. What I'm interested in is that the potential of that as a very powerful addition to the reflective process. So participants doing something and they suddenly think, hang on, that's something really interesting going on here, record, save it for later, come back, reflect. One of the things that concerns me about open space learning events is that they can be seen to happen in a vacuum. Now I'm not saying that happens here at all, I don't think it does, except for when an open space activity is done as for demonstration purposes, say in a conference. It is in a vacuum then. So you don't get the fact that there's a big context happening before the event and happening, carrying on during the event beyond its focus. So students are coming with ideas, history, bringing that to the event. And then after the event, they're taking things away with them and reflecting and carrying on and building out of the experience. So there's all that. And then there's the open space learning event, which has to happen in a demarcated space to some extent. Has to have that kind of separation from all the context. I think that's one of the things that makes open space learning powerful, is that it can do that. But at the same time, the context, it actually really matters to the participants.
Sure. Yeah.
It's their lives, it's their academic lives.
And that seems to touch on the idea of the integration of open space learning then. So that it isn't a field trip, you know. The one-off. Let's have a bit of touchy-feely fun, then let's move back to the serious stuff.
Well, I mean, one of the things that one of the other limitations I've seen is that because the skills to run an open space learning event and the facilities, the actual spaces themselves, are so far away from the everyday academic activities of staff and students, then it tends to be like that. Though I would like, I mean, personally, I do spend a lot of time sort of dreaming up my perfect university. I think something like this does exist. I have heard about, I think it's a small Catholic college somewhere in the middle of America. They have something like this. So they have, it's actually, the integration is very, very close in that the student halls and residences are in the same building. So they, you know, the social lives are around spaces where different kinds of teaching can take place for different purposes. You have sort of traditional teaching spaces, but then you have access to open space learning kinds of spaces or technology enhanced learning grid style spaces. And the movement between those spaces could be very fluid as required. So a group of a teacher and a group of students can decide, okay, we've gone as far as we possibly can in this traditional kind of space, let's go and do an open space learning kind of activity and see if we can crack this open a bit more or be creative or whatever and have that very fluid movement. And the students can self-organise, so they have access to the spaces very easily all the time. They can self-organise and say, instead of having a traditional reading group or a revision group, they can say, let's go and use open space learning for this and have access to that. That kind of fluidity. The other place that we see that kind of fluid use of space for different purposes, including the kind of open space learning approach, is in by interaction designers in the design industry. So there are companies in the design industry where they are setting up their working spaces to operate like that and have a very fluid movement. That's very important still. I think there are connections.
Yeah, definitely. So you've already said that the question is not about technology, the question is about how you use technology. Can you think of certain landmark successes you've had using technology in open space learning, or could you just talk about some of the ways in which you've witnessed it being creatively used?
Yeah, I have used it in one of the very obvious ways with master's students in the Reinvention Center, Reinvention Studio. We had, I think it was a 3-hour long workshop with a diversity of activities in an open space. We started off with some sort of classic open space learning warm-up activities, but warm-up activities that were connected to the goal of getting the students to step back and think about themselves and how they would present themselves online to the outside world. And during those 3 hours, I gave them the iPod Touch devices with the camera and various points. They were working in small groups. Small groups would record a bit of reflective or they would record themselves doing a presentation or an activity, and then towards the end we were able to gather in the devices and edit very quickly all of that footage into a narrative that represented the event. And obviously that's a single narrative, very selective editing, so it doesn't do that kind of live archiving thing, but it gives you something that is an output for them, or at least it's an output that reminds them and sparks their interest in the future. But that was just on a small scale. We haven't seen much of that, unfortunately.
But we have used the technology to document most open space learning events, I suppose.
But I think the documentation has been very much separate from the learning process, which is a shame, because what the technology allows you to do is people to self-document and reflect and to journal
within the actual space itself.
That's something we've not seen that much of, and I think not seen enough of. I mean, that's actually the essential.
So what you're suggesting is that you could use the technology in the space and in the time that you of that space, as it were.
And increasingly, the process is becoming slicker, faster, better joined up, so there isn't the necessity for lots of work afterwards to make sense of it.
So you can actually review at the time, so it's reflective at the time.
I've seen quite a lot of very interesting work by students working in an open space kind of way. In particular, students working on the English department creative projects, where they get to do a creative project collaboratively in an open space if they want, rather than a written essay. And also theatre studies students, that's more sort of traditional kind of activity there. And the use of technology by those students in those contexts has been different. This is another aspect of how to use technology for open space learning. They have beforehand, before the event, created videos, other kinds of media, that they can take into the space. So in one great example, group of students working on Othello took three of the IMACs into the studio and played a series of videos on the IMAX, and they were videos that addressed the issue of colour in Othello and provoked the other participants, the viewers, to respond in an interesting way. So using media, more sophisticated media, as an inspiring or provoking or challenging element that you can bring into the space. Now the students have done that on several occasions brilliantly. Another one was a theatre studies dissertation project in which the students built a spiral of laptops playing videos that would you go into the space, do things in the space, and this provides a kind of focus and a challenge and inspiration to thought. That's been quite impressive as well. So that's another way of using technology as a input to the event. That's getting easier. I think one of the barriers has been it has been very hard to do that kind of thing. It's now getting remarkably easier.
And but nonetheless, you think one of the challenges going forward will be to integrate this further, to integrate technology further within the in the process of OSL.
I think but it's not quite that straightforward because we have practitioners for whom that's not a natural thing to do. Participants for whom it's an entirely obvious thing to do. Now the participants, do they feel comfortable with? I don't think they would feel comfortable with bringing their natural way of behaving into an open space learning context, where the session leaders maybe aren't bringing a technology. I mean, the reason it's worked for me is because I think, well, partly the type of students I've been working with, but also I have my iPod Touch, it's there in my pocket all the time. And I think I probably started off by, before handing the iPods out to anybody, or before the other students got their cameras out, I handed this to a student and said, okay, I've just come up with something that I want to remember and it's important. Could you just film me saying this? And they filmed me saying it. So it's just setting an example. And that also shows the kind of ways in which it's acceptable to use the technology as well. So I was sort of leading by example on that, and it just seemed natural after that.
Okay, to finish, maybe we could talk a little bit about the legacy of open space learning, or the open space learning project, which is finishing in July. And I suppose there are two registers. One would be institutionally, Warwick, and one would be beyond Warwick, I mean, the future of higher education, teaching, I suppose. Within Warwick, I mean, how do you see open space learning developing after the project?
Well, there is, I think, a big gap now in that
this one's his battery's gone, it says.
Really?
Battery full,
I think maybe the batteries are starting to get old now.
Yeah.
It might be worth stopping relying on the battery. It will have recorded, made a file from what it had before running out.
It's a pity.
So, institutional impact, potentially very big,
mm-hmm.
because I'm trying to say this diplomatically. I've just come from a meeting with one of the university's senior officers where we were talking about this. Warwick has spent many years now, I've been involved in this, and quite a lot of money trying things out, dabbling, I think is the term that was used in the meeting. And it's also worth remembering the feedback from the QAA, it's not an inspection, the QAA report, whatever it is, where they came and looked at teaching and learning in the university, and the response was, yeah, there's some good stuff happening, but it's uneven, it's not across the board.
Hmm. When was that?
2008, I think, 2009,
yeah.
Maybe early 2009. So unevenness is a big issue. I know that from being an e-learning advisor who works with departments all across the whole university.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a growing realization that dabbling and unevenness can't carry on.
Mm-hmm.
We need to step back and start coming up with some big, realistic, practical, but effective ideas that are going to significant that we can do to significantly improve across the board teaching and learning, and also there is slightly more debatable is the question of the idea that this should be we should find something that is unique to Warwick that makes Warwick special. That's all about Warwick in the international market and all that, charging fees and so on. But there is going to be, I think, well, I've been told that I've got to concentrate on the big picture now and coming up with something that's going to make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that what we've learned from open space learning, what we've learned about using space and technology, will play a big part in that thinking.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the things I was saying about being able to flexibly go to spaces that are the right space at a right time, that's a big challenge to a university.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very big challenge. I think it's very important, but how do we get there?
Mm.
Well, it's going to take some serious work.
I mean, in that context, this is a problematic space because it's so far removed from...
Yeah,
central campus.
But our what are they called? Space committee or whatever, which isn't about the stars. It's about they're very interested in trying to adapt existing spaces to do this. And then, of course, we've got to try and get that approach adopted more widely.
Yeah.
But I think there's more will to do that than we think. We've got a generation of students, probably research students now, who've grown up with a learning grid. Maybe they were undergraduates, so they're used to some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the legacy will be a strong one.
Yeah. Okay.
Within the university.
Yeah. Good. And what about disseminating it beyond the university? I mean, how do you think we should best disseminate it?
Yeah. That's a tough one because there is this because the overwhelming need to develop the university and to step onwards significantly is going to take a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And there may be there is a tendency to discourage collaborations and things that may help over university. I think that's wrong personally. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a hard one.
But I suppose there is also a strategy of dissemination, which is very much about, you know, you need to disseminate it in order that it belong to work, in a sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a paradox that, you know, yeah. It needs to be dispersed in order to be on.
That's the intellectual property paradox,
isn't
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Your ideas are worthless. You don't share them. But if you share them,
yeah.
They become worthless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's...
In terms, we've got an open space learning book, but we've got internet resources. I mean, do you think that's a viable way to do it? And, you know, demonstrations online, e-books, anything like that?
This is my approach would be the approach of an interaction designer, an IT kind of thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this: to make it easy for people to understand and adopt different approaches, different practices, and to think about how a practice may fit with their context and what they're trying to do. How designers do that is to look at something that works, abstract it into a pattern, so it's a describable set of interactions, resource arrangements, support processes, and the likes, simple to understand, with a very clear name. So Jonathan's theory building is a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And then in some cases you're going to need to think about, okay, what infrastructure needs to be there to make that pattern possible. In the ideal world, we could tell people about the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these are the patterns, this is what they do. You use this pattern for this purpose, or you can experiment it and modulate it in certain ways. There's the patterns. They can look, okay, I want that one. Click a button, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of simplicity that's needed to make wide-scale adoption possible. Because at the moment, what's happening in higher education is that people aren't thinking about patterns because they just have to accept the default pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they have to accept the default pattern is nobody's thought about alternatives at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we end up standing in front of 300 students delivering a 2-hour long lecture.
And everything that isn't the default pattern is a one-off.
It's a one-off, it's marginalised, it's an experiment, it's an investigation.
Yeah.
So we need to create a wider array of patterns that are well understood, appropriate, and can be delivered.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we have to do with technology, IT, teaching, to deal with such a large environment and to try to get change across that very large and complex environment.
Mm-hmm.
Now there may also be spin-offs for the student and the teacher in that making the pattern very, very visible, so you know what you're doing. You can say, okay, is that the right pattern? I'm doing this, it's not quite working, maybe we need to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's essential.
Yeah.
Making it transparent and visible. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we have a position where in a department, half of the modules deliberately use an open space learning technique, or in certain points they use an open space learning technique, and a student, and that's very clearly advertised, and a student can make an informed choice based on that.
Yeah.
I think that's that would be a good position to be in.
Yeah.
This is good. This is good. This conversation is helping me to clarify what it is that we need to do in IT and teaching and learning.
But it's how we would get to the stage that a department would accept this.
Well, you know, you've got to. It's a hard one because how do we know which ones are right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know which ones are right because people are using them, but how do they. What helps them to use them? They'll only use them if they've got the support, the infrastructure, and the facilities.
Yeah.
How do we justify getting the infrastructure, the facilities? Well, we have to argue that people want them and they're using them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that will take a different approach to proving business cases.
Mm-hmm.
To use an inappropriate term. Mm-hmm. We need to work out good approaches to do that and proving that something is the right thing to do.
Mm.
And finding evidence and convincing the people with the money.
Yeah.
We can't dabble anymore.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really go anywhere.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I want to see open space learning go big. I want to see loads of money. I want to see open spaces all over the place. And I want to see it built into teaching and learning across the university and explicitly advertised as such.
Yeah.
I don't want to see students really understanding what it's about and making informed choices.
Yeah.
Yes. Vote for me.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Rob. That was great.
I did that last bit thinking I was still on camera, of course.
Yeah.